Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me talking Michigan's 31-6 win over Bowling Green, in which the Wolverines moved to 3-0 on the season, finished non-conference play with a 96-16 scoring differential. Seeing that we are recording this on Monday, Steve and I are both talking, probably going to shift to more of a big picture or medium picture episode. You know, we're not going to sit here and pour over this play or that play against a MAC team, but we are going to talk about some of the things we saw over the last 3 weeks, maybe what surprised us, what impressed us, what we still probably need to see. I'll have a story over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan247Sports.com, that kind of digs into to my thoughts. It's going to be looking at the things that we learned about Michigan during non-conference play and the things we still want to learn. Some things the jury is still out on. So be sure to check out that along with all sorts of stories from the weekly press conferences, from the game, the recruiting side of things. All of those angles over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan247Sports.com. So, Steve, looking at this Bowling Green game, I mean, it ended up being a pretty similar looking game to maybe a little less scoring than necessarily expected, but it ended up being a pretty dominant game. Michigan got the reserves back. But I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about the J.J. McCarthy interceptions, and we'll get to that. But I think the one thing that isn't being discussed enough on the offensive side, I felt like Blake Corum looked like himself, and I felt like Michigan's run game was a little bit more effective. You know, we've talked in these other episodes, they don't need to run for 300 yards against Bowling Green. In fact, that probably is a misuse of snaps if you're really trying to get both running backs 100 yards now when you have such a long season, and both of them have proven, Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, have proven that they can make big plays in big games. I felt like the run game got incrementally better. So, Steve, did you see enough Saturday that you think that they're ready to rock, or are there still some things? I mean, Donovan Edwards only had 50 yards, but he also doesn't have a ton of carries so far. You know, Blake Corum got over 100 yards for the first time this season. I mean, I don't want to have the same discussion we had last week, because I do think they got better. Sack adjusted, they averaged more than 6 yards per carry. Felt like both the yards before contact were better and after contact were better. You know, Blake Corum had that 54-yard run to kind of help boost those stats a little bit. Felt like between the tackles, they were running the ball effectively. Where do you stand with this run game? And I think that's, you know, we've seen the pass game have A game level moments. Run game got closer to an A level this past weekend. I mean, guess what have you seen, and what do you still need to see maybe against Rutgers to feel like this offense can click on all cylinders when there is, you know, a top 25, top 10 opponent on the other side of the ball?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, I just like taking a step back and looking across the country, it's like these non-conference cupcake type games just really seem to kind of bring a lot of teams down a little bit closer to their competition than what, like, Texas and Wyoming were tied going into the fourth quarter on Saturday. Texas number 3 in the country, right behind Michigan. Just most of these teams have struggled to a certain extent. I think for Michigan, though, specifically, I guess the way I look at it, I guess I kind of compare it to basketball a little bit, where teams are getting open shots, they're just not hitting them, you know. So we've heard Mike Hart talk, you know, Michigan being a block away We've seen Jim Harbaugh mention them challenging Cornelius Johnson to do a better job blocking on the outside, which they believe he did on Saturday. It does feel like they're, again, like maybe a block away or just a decision away. So, you know, like J.J. McCarthy, the interception, I don't know if it was the first interception or the second one, where he had Roman Wilson was wide open and he threw it to Cornelius Johnson instead, who was very covered.
Yeah, the second one. Yep.
Right. It just feels like, I guess I'm just like, I'm not one who's down on the play calling at all. And guys are finding themselves open. It's just like, it's just some hiccups, you know, really this game on Saturday specifically, it felt a lot of the game that Michigan played really, really well. It was just like, four plays, I guess, ish, where they just made major mistakes, three of them by McCarthy, right? I mean, otherwise it just felt like this was never another game where Michigan, it's not like it was ever in doubt or anything like that. So yeah, Blake Corum looks fine. Edwards getting back on track. I want to plug our colleague Sam Webb, does the breakdowns every week offensively with former Michigan offensive coordinator Al Borges, former defensive coach for Michigan Vance Bedford. I believe they did a good job. It was last week talking about how Donovan Edwards is a rhythm type guy in the running game, a guy who kind of needs, sort of like a quarterback sometimes needs to get into a rhythm, give him a few easy passes early. I don't know if that means Michigan needs to maybe feature Edwards a little bit more earlier in the game to kind of get him going. I also, to be fair, and I don't remember exactly how Borges explained it. I think he talked about how they had to manage when they had Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams at Auburn, how you kind of manage the two guys, two really good running backs, but two different types. Obviously, Edwards and Corum, two different types of running backs. I don't really know. I guess I don't know how you get a running back into a rhythm per se. I mean, do you run a certain type of play? You know, but he's, again, we know now that he was injured for fall camp, so didn't really get into the swing of things until right before the season started. And we also know there have been a couple plays where I think Michigan was one missed block away from springing him free for a big play. So 9 carries, 50 yards, still not up to, you know, maybe what we expected going into the season. But again, I still kind of wonder with these early season games that are never in doubt, how much tinkering is still going on, you know, just that type of deal. So overall, I guess the jury's sort of still out, right? Because we don't know how much it's just been tinkering and just kind of working out the kinks, or are there some situations where they are kind of having a little bit of a struggle or still kind of legitimately not quite on the same page about stuff. So, I you know, with McCarthy, I don't think we'll expect to see a repeat performance like that, especially considering how well he played the 2 weeks before.
Right.
You know, but otherwise, I mean, I think that it felt like the offensive line played better. I think, you know, didn't Ladarius Henderson got a shout out from Jim Harbaugh? I think we're probably going to see.
Yeah, numbers favored him pretty well, too.
Right. So we're probably going to see more of him, which, again, he's another guy we talked about. Didn't enroll till the summer. Sometimes it takes these guys, especially a new, you know, new player, new line, new unit, new players he's playing with. It can take a guy a while. Even a guy like Henderson, who I believe was projected to be drafted before even deciding to transfer to Michigan. So, you know, we'll probably see more of him. But again, overall, it's hard to be really too concerned when you consider how easily Michigan has won these three games. Corum's rushing stats are almost identical to what they were through three games last year still after Saturday. So I feel like just like almost anything, like I think they're just going to get better and better as the season goes on.
I think so too. You know, with Donovan, it's a good point about the rhythm running, but you know, a guy who's going to get the ball three times in a row, you know, he has a lot of instincts when he's out on the field. I think the only thing that concerns me, and this is a stat I brought up in the summer, and I think in the spring as well, is he got 526 of his yards last season. He had 991. 526 of them came on 12 breakaway runs, you know, 30 plus yards. Everyone talks about the 75 yarder against Ohio State and then the, what was it, the 85 yarder, like on the very next drive. He had, so 12 of his carries, 526 of his 991 yards. So more than half on all of his other carries last season, he averaged 3.2 yards per carry. Were there runs in between? Yes. But I think he's more of a boom or bust running back. He is someone that has the acceleration, the speed. You know, when he's to the second level, you're going to have a really hard time stopping him from scoring a touchdown. I still think that there is growth to be had or growth to be found in his game in terms of, I think in the summer I said, you know, he has a home run play. It's now, you know, how can he hit the singles and doubles when a defense is kind of stacking the box or keying in on him or, you know, kind of ready to stop the run. So yeah, I think that's the next step. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point dealing with injuries, the run game. I mean, they just haven't asked either guy to get a lot of carries. Cause I also do wonder, I'd have to really pour through some play by play data here, but like what's Donovan Edwards yards per carry in the first half versus second half? Cause I felt like last season, cause he had what, 10 rushing yards against Ohio State in the first half. You know, I think part of his strength is the durability. As I said, like he can almost sense when the defense is tired or they're slipping. I mean, he's a very keen observer, even in press conferences. You know, he just notices little things. So I think that is, you know, beyond the box score. I mean, obviously the box score says what it says, but I think that was something I was kind of watching this month out of Donovan to see how he is at the 6 yard runs, the 8 yard runs, you know, the 5 yard runs, the efficient run plays that aren't necessarily touchdowns. Much lower percentage of his runs were that kind of run than like a Blake Corum. I felt like Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins a couple years ago, that was their strength, is they were blocked for 3 yards, but they'd make it 6. You know, they were blocked for 4 yards, but they'd make it 8. So yeah, I think that's the only part that I'm going to be continuing to watch. I mean, he's going to get his plays. He's going to get his big runs. He doesn't have an explosive run yet this season. So that's part of why his numbers don't look as good than maybe they did a season ago. So I think that's the only part of the run game that I'm still out on. I think I've seen enough from Blake Corum. I feel like he can be everything he was last season. You know, the run game or the offensive line, I should say, similar to last year. You know, you probably want to see, I do think it would have been valuable for Michigan to have seen a little more effectiveness from its third, fourth, and fifth string running backs. You know, they come in the fourth quarter of these games, and that's been maybe the one hang up that you and I would agree with the fanic about, the fan panic, is the second string offense just has not moved the ball like past Jim Harbaugh teams. You know, last season when they were winning by 50 plus, the first 2.5 quarters looked very similar. The reason why those scores were so much more lopsided is the second string. And I'd say 2016 offense was the same way. The second string was still producing. So shifting away from just the run game and kind of looking at the offense in general, through three games, what is the biggest surprise to you on offense, good or bad, either direction, that you've seen in non-conference play so far?
I guess not a huge, I mean, Roman Wilson could set some records this year, I feel like. I mean, he's putting up some touchdown numbers. I'd have to look at the record book, but how many does he have right now? 7?
He has 6, yeah.
6?
6 or 3, I mean, games, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him keeping up that pace, obviously, but, you know, he's really sort of emerged. And to be fair, I mean, Cornelius Johnson had a great game on Saturday, too. I think they've been even a little bit better than I even thought they would be. I don't know if maybe that's not the biggest surprise, I suppose. I don't know. Because I guess on the flip side, I'm not super surprised that they have struggled as far as the backup quarterback situation. It feels like when Jack Tuttle's healthy, it's almost got to be him at this point, right? I mean, it just does. They have nobody else that they've brought in has looked particularly enticing necessarily. They have been a little bit banged up down the depth chart, right? I mean, running back. Yeah, I think Cole Cabana got in on Saturday for the first time. But what, none of...
Yeah, Mullins. Benjamin Hall, Tavier Dunlap are both...
Right, so...
Going through something, as Jim Harbaugh likes to say.
Yeah, so interesting in that regard. But again, there's just a lot that we don't really know. I guess I'm maybe mildly surprised that we haven't seen more production from maybe not even when the second string quarterback is in necessarily, but just a little bit further down the depth chart at certain positions, guys that we talked about that might, that we heard some decent stuff about that we thought might make an impact, right? Like maybe even like a Marlon Klein who heard really good things about in fall camp. Matt Hibner, I know, was banged up, but also, I guess to be fair, we did say that we thought AJ Barner would be one of the most important players on Michigan's team. And I think he's had a very quiet beginning to the season. It feels like, I don't know. I guess
little surprised getting to Saturday's game specifically, only three players caught passes.
And I was just going to say, and it was your main three guys. You know, what did he complete to, like 9 or 10 different guys the week before, didn't they? I mean, you know, Fred Moore's been in there, Max Bredesen, Barner, obviously. So interesting in that regard. But overall, I mean, I don't know. There's nothing really that's surprised me too much. I guess seeing Henderson emerge on Saturday makes me, you know, like I said, kind of makes me wonder if it really was just a summer enrolling type thing. Because to me, it was a little bit of a surprise that we didn't see more of him early, given how highly regarded he was coming over from Arizona State. But again, that may have just been a getting acclimated type deal. So, you know, because I'm not another not surprised is that there has been some shifting up front already. We had kind of expected it, and we were wondering if that would be the case because they're so deep, particularly at the tackle positions. There are four guys they felt like are starter caliber, and we've seen three of the four get what appears to be extensive opportunities, right? We haven't seen as much of Jones as we have of Hinton, now Henderson and Barnhart, obviously, but I don't know. I don't know if, like, I wonder if, you know, we say what the biggest surprise of people are expecting us to say, like, we're surprised they haven't scored 60 points a game or something like that. Like, that's not the answer you're going to get here. So no major surprises, but I do think, yeah, I mean, I think Roman Wilson has in particular has been even better than what we thought he would be. Again, another guy who quietly has always sort of had little bumps and bruises and stuff throughout his career. He's never really been a total 100% guy, and I think we're seeing what he's capable of at 100%. He should have had 2 touchdown catches again on Saturday. I mean, he was wide open on that one interception.
Yeah.
Wide open. So, you know, he's playing at a high level right now.
He is. And Cornelius is too. You know, at Pro Football Focus, you can take their grades for what they are. I mean, they're one analytics site's opinion. But of the, you know, 50 or so pass catchers who been targeted 10 or more times in the Big Ten, they are number one and number two in receiving grade. You know, they're both top five in receiving yards. You know, Roman Wilson, 6 touchdowns, that obviously leads the Big Ten in terms of receiving touchdowns. So I think the fact that they've been really consistent, because both players have had big games. Cornelius Johnson does not get bigger than the performance he had against Ohio State. And Roman Wilson, I felt like, had a really good game against TCU. I mean, he was a video replay controversial review away from 3 touchdowns in that game. And he had over 120 all-purpose yards, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, we've seen them have big games, but for them to thread together 3 really impressive games, a lot of people are talking about JJ McCarthy, rightfully so, but how open are those two getting? I mean, it's really, that has to be really encouraging for Michigan to see. I did have a story about it last week, just how open they are, how consistently they are. You know, they're catching passes that in the past they might have dropped. Neither of them have a dropped pass this year. They're both doing well in contested catches. So, you know, you're seeing, before the season we said, well, will anyone step up to be the game-to-game pass catcher in place of Ronnie Bell? And so far, 2 players have answered the bell. Yeah, so that's been the pleasant surprise. You know, I do think I expected the offensive line. I know I said before the season that there was going to need to be time to develop that chemistry, develop that rapport. But maybe I was reading too much into the depth and the iron sharpening iron talk that they had in fall camp. I kind of expected them to dominate a little bit more. You know, I expected mistakes here and there, but little surprised they haven't been a little bit more forceful, especially in the run game, knowing what Drake Nugent can do, knowing what Zach Zinter, Trevor Keegan can do. You know, even if there is some shuffling at tackle, these are guys who are experienced, who have the size, have the experience, have the physicality. You know, they can be effective run blocking tackles. So I'm a little surprised at not so much the box score stats, but you just haven't seen them pave these giant holes. And I don't know if it needs to be, you know, I don't know if they need to do more power. I don't know. That's for an offensive coordinator to decide who gets to see practice and everything. But that's been maybe the one spot where I'm like, huh, a little surprised we haven't seen more there. All right, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about the defense, where things have been much more dominant. Well, among the topics that we'll discuss, is this Michigan's best defensive front under Jim Harbaugh? And then another question, is this the nation's best defense right now? And if not, what needs to change to get the Wolverines to that point? You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So, Steve, we don't take this conversation lightly. I mean, we were doing podcasts and coverage for 2016, 2018, 2021, 2022, but man, oh man, especially in run defense, I am just very impressed with this defensive front. Feel like Chris Jenkins has been as advertised. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant have been as advertised. Had a column last week about how I feel like I'm looking at a defensive front, speaking specifically to the interior linemen. I feel like I'm looking at three future top 50 first round NFL draft picks. Feel like I'm looking at least two players who could make a run as All-Americans before they leave Michigan. And I feel like I'm looking at a defensive front that compares to when Alabama was winning national titles, when Georgia won its last two, Clemson, when they won in 2016, 2018, those teams just, it seemed like they had impossibly good defensive fronts. You know, guys who were 320 pounds and were faster or could chase down a running back. I mean, a lot of people talk about the quarterback, and I get it, but it did feel like every national championship team since Jim Harbaugh arrived at Michigan has had like some crazy good defensive interior players. I feel like Michigan has that. And I think the edge guys and the linebackers, and I've been impressed by the safeties with their run fills too. I feel like this is the best run defense in the country. You know, the stats for that are always kind of dependent on how good of rushing attacks you face, but very impressed with the run defense. You know, the pass rush, I don't know that it's been there quite as consistently, but I do feel like the pressure rate is there. So the sacks might not be there, but it does feel like the pressures are there. Steve, you've covered the 2016, 2018, 2017 defensive front was pretty good too, with Mo Hurst, as well as, you know, Chase Winovich, Rashawn Gary. I mean, there's been a lot of NFL draft picks, a lot of great defensive fronts. It's early, but a lot of these players also did play last season. So where from what you've seen, does this defensive front rank among the ones under Jim Harbaugh that Michigan has been able to roll out?
They're on track, I think, to maybe be the best. I think the one, I guess I always go back to 16, though, and think about how they had how many tackles for a loss against Ohio State? Like 18 or some outrageous amount of tackles for a loss. I know not all caused or all from their front, but the front really drew a lot of attention. I want to say all those guys played in the pros at one point or another. I think interior wise, though, this is probably going to end up being the best that they've had under Harbaugh for sure. Deepest. You know, Cam Good had a sack on Saturday. He made a few good plays. Rashawn Benny, if he can be a little bit more consistent, Another guy that I feel like they are going to be able to rely on. But the top three, hard to imagine there's a better 1-2-3 punch in the middle of any defensive front in the country right now. And yeah, opponents haven't been great so far, but I mean, yeah, these guys have been as advertised. Kenneth Grant does a lot of things that you can't teach and does a lot of things that not many interior offensive linemen are going to be able to slow down over the course, fully slow down over the course of a four quarter game. He feels like one of those guys that is just going to be able to make at least one or two big impact plays throughout any four quarter game. I mean, I don't know, was it the season opener? His pressure caused, I think, Michigan's first interception of the season. Just not even having to get a sack or a tackle, but even just creating havoc on the inside. It's just, I don't know, the difference for me might be on the edge as far as like the entire defensive front. That's the only thing
Yeah, I
keeping
think
me
that's
from
fair.
right. I think the interior is the best, probably. I think there have been other edge groups that have been more effective. That's not to say this edge group hasn't been really good so far as well, but I mean, you got to think about some of the guys that Michigan's put out in the last, I mean, geez, I want to say like in a 5 minute stretch yesterday, I think Gary had a sack. I think Quiddy Pay forced a or sacked and forced a fumble on CJ Stroud. And then I don't know that there was somebody else in there that had another play as well. I mean, Michigan's got so many edge guys in the pros at this point, but so I don't know. It's just, it depends on what you value more. I mean, I do agree. I think that there's a much more of a correlation between having an elite interior and winning national championships. You talk about Georgia, you talk about Bama, obviously. Those are schools that are taking, feels like one or two guys every cycle that are like 315, 320 pounds, right? I mean, and I know Michigan's looking for one in this class, in the 24 class right now. I think, yeah, I do think there's more of a historically more of a correlation, but who's still standing at the end usually has a at least one solid guy in the middle, but usually more often than not, the bigger thing is having multiple guys that can make plays in the middle, not just having one star, right? It's that depth. It's beating up the offensive line over four quarters, the same way Michigan likes to instill their will up front offensively with their offensive line. Obviously it can go the other way, and Michigan has a trio up front that can really do that. And Grant's emergence has just been huge, where they don't have to fully rely on Graham and Jenkins all the time. And Benny, like I said, and Benny and Cam Good. We're still wondering who that's. We talked, remember, I think the depth chart or the defensive line breakdown we did before the season, the biggest question was who would be that sixth. We're trying to figure out who their sixth guy is. I mean, could it be Trey Pierce still? I know Mike Elson had a lot of really good things to say about him as a true freshman, but either way, Michigan's deep and super, super talented up front in the middle. But overall, to end this really long-winded point, I still think I'd take 16 from top to bottom, but interior-wise, I would definitely take this year's.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the edge is kind of the difference. Boy, that 2016 defense, now not all of this was the guys up front, but they had 120 tackles for loss in 13 games. Just for context, Michigan had 73 in 14 games last year and 71 in 14 games in 2021. So I mean, you're talking about a defense that averaged just under 10 tackles for loss per game. So I think, the difference is the edge guys. The interior, I think what's really nice for those curious about like the why the interior defense is so correlated to championship success is one, because I think you can find, like, if you have the right strength and conditioning, or you can recruit well enough or identify talent well enough, you can, those guys can be matchup nightmares. I mean, there's just no defending a 320 pounder who runs a 5.0 and can bench press 225 pounds 30 times. Like, there's no offensive lineman who can one-on-one that on a regular basis. But then two, you don't have to stack the box to stop the run. You can just do standard run fills. You don't have to rush two linebackers to get some pressure on a third and long. Your guys up the middle can move that pocket or condense that pocket. So I do think that's the why, I suppose. I'm kind of with you. I think the guys up the middle, Grant, Jenkins, Graham, probably number one. The edge guys, I think you're still, you know, Jalen Harrell, I thought, had a nice statement game on Saturday. It might have gotten overlooked, you know, because everyone was so worried
about the
halftime
score. Of course it did. It's Jalen Harrell. He always gets overlooked. It's like his MO.
Yeah, yeah, we did say he was probably the most underrated defensive player before the season began. So, yeah, I think he's someone that if he can string this together for a couple more games, you know, then you start and he starts getting on higher up in the draft boards. Because I think they have a lot of guys who could get drafted at the edge. I don't know if they have a true, like, top 50, top couple rounds kind of guy just yet. But maybe. I think the talent is there for one or two such players to emerge. So, yeah, that's probably the next thing.
Can I just say one thing? I just went back and looked at a 2006. I mean, I don't know, man. That 16 team was loaded up front. Yeah. You're talking, you got
Glasgow, you got
Charlton, Wormley, Brian Monet was on that team, Ryan Glasgow, Matt Godin, Rashawn Gary, Mo Hurst, Chase Winovich. I mean, that's all of even Godin got a cup of coffee in the pros. Glasgow was in the pros. Brian Monet is still in the pros. I believe Chris is a free agent right now. I do not believe he has a team and has a home. I'm not sure about Taco either, but obviously Rashawn Gary. But either, I mean, if you consider Wormley an inside guy, I mean, you're talking Wormley, Monet, Glasgow, Godin, and Mo Hurst. I mean, that might actually be better than what, if you go 1-5. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think Jenkins.
That's fair. I do think you're right. The sheer depth, and you saw it all the time. I mean, wasn't there a play of like Ryan Glasgow, like chasing down a running back, and then the very next play, Chris Wormley comes in with a sack. Like there was a little bit of like a man. They never stop. I think in my mind, I think Jenkins and Graham could legitimately be All Americans, and I think Jenkins and Grant could be first round draft picks. Graham, I don't know the testing numbers for him. Right, Michigan kind of reveals the testing numbers for Jenkins and Grant. I don't know how NFL scouts view Graham. I feel like he can be an All-American. So it's a fun debate. I do think 2016 wins because they had Tackle Charlton, Chris Wormley, as veterans too, right? Like, it's one thing if it's a future All-American. It's another thing if it's a guy who is playing at an All-Big Ten level that year. So.
Sure. That's fair. I just looking at that 16, but I was like, I just forgot how many
good football players
were on that. I know, that's what I'm looking at, the box score against Ohio State. They had 8 sacks in that game, and that's on Barrett, you know, a guy who could get out of the pocket. And they still had 8 sacks as a team in that game. It was insane.
So, they had 7 players that season get at least 9 tackles for loss.
Unreal. Yeah, that's, man, hard to believe. Anyway, but yeah, I went back to look because I want to make sure I wasn't forgetting anybody on that 16 team. And I'm like, yeah, because like I said, even Matt Godin got drafted or was an undrafted free agent or whatever. But man, I mean, just that team had a lot of really good players on it for sure.
Yeah. Getting back to this year's team, I did like that you mentioned Cam Good and Rashawn Benny. I felt like they had, you know, they're not going to get the publicity that the top 3 guys are going to get, but I felt like they had some pretty nice plays against Bowling Green. And that's what you want to see in a game like that is, you know, you kind of know what Jenkins can do, what Mason Graham can do. You kind of want to see the next group, the second, I hate to say second string, cause they're going to rotate in and they're going to play meaningful snaps all season. But yeah, if you're Michigan, you want to see those kind of players step up and make some wow plays. And I feel like they did. All right, expanding to the whole defense, I don't know if you watched the Georgia game. I didn't watch all of it. I watched the first half, and then I had to get to the stadium. But does Michigan have a case as the number one defense in the country? They haven't played anybody. So, you know, this is admittedly a very early conversation, but I feel like they've done a really nice job in all phases of the defense, and that's without two of, I would argue, their what we ranked them this summer, two of their 5 most important defensive players in Will Johnson and Rod Moore. You know, Mekhari Page has been in and out as well. He's a starter. He's pretty important as well. So it almost feels like they've been the best defense statistically in the country so far with two starters out. So, Steve, we're going to see them. They're going to have moments where they struggle, and we will see that at some point in the next few weeks with Big Ten play starting. And we'll see other defenses emerge. But what do you want to see from this defense in the next couple weeks that could have you maybe comfortably making the case for Michigan as the number one defense in the country right now?
I think it's the same question that we sort of discussed heading into the season. I think depth at cornerback, right? Front seven seems pretty solidified at this point. We just talked about how deep they are in the middle. They're still deep at edge too. I didn't want to downplay it. We're comparing them to the 16 squad. I mean, we talk about how great that unit was. Like, Michigan still has good, really good play at both edge positions, like, for sure. But yeah, I mean, number one defense in the country statistically. And that, I mean, I almost think you kind of undersold Johnson and Moore as far, like, they're probably two of the, you're talking about a preseason All-American at corner. And
I did say two of the top five most important,
I mean,
players.
Well, Rod Moore was a preseason, what, first team All Big Ten as well?
Somewhere, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking two first
team All-Big Ten defenders. I said he would be a top five safety in the draft, right?
Okay, so well, there you go. So
back when we did our safety preview.
There you go. So, like, you're talking about two hugely important players. So, you know, and I think if you're Michigan, I think this has probably been a big, in a way, I guess this is one of those things you always look at as like sort of a blessing in disguise, provided both players will be back and like when they're able to play, will be fully ready, you know, in that you've been able to kind of check, you know, it's look at Keon Sabb has emerged as a guy, right? I mean, that's been, you know, he's gotten some very, very important playing time for Michigan in the first three games of the season. Now you feel like Michigan and with Quentin Johnson getting a game ball and Saturday has the interception. And I believe he had the big play on special teams that Jim Harbaugh said he got a game ball. I mean, you feel like you have four reliable players at the safety position once Rod Moore is all the way back. But I still think it is that depth on the outside that I think is going to be, you know, could still end up being pivotal for Michigan. And I guess, you know, you do kind of look at the schedule and it really, despite whatever may happen this Saturday, it still comes down to Ohio State, right? I mean, Michigan State's completely imploding. If they lose to Penn State, I don't think it'll be because of Penn State's depth at the wide receiver position. I don't think they have, what, Keandre Lambert, and then they have a transfer. They're not, like, particularly explosive or deep at the receiver spot. I just, you know, Ohio State, we know, has tons of guys at receiver they can throw at you. So, you know, the more solid play they can get out of guys that won't be named Mike Sanders still and Will Johnson in October and November, I think will still be the biggest thing that will, because I'm just three linebackers. I feel like I feel very comfortable with it. It seems like Hausman has really worked himself into it and being a guy that Michigan trusts. So, you know, you talk up front, you talk your linebacker position and safety, all feel like you have not just like guys, but like multiple guys that they can rotate in and out or, you know, maybe give a breather to or whatever. Corner still kind of that spot where you've seen them give some extended sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, an extended audition for guys like DJ Waller and Jair Hill. You know, do not think we'd be seeing them as much as we have unless Michigan A, thought they were capable, but B, you know, if Michigan felt good about their depth there, I don't know if they'd be playing two of their true freshmen in all four or in all three non-conference games. So feels like that's the missing link still. But again, there are a lot of guys, a lot of bodies, a lot of guys that are capable, it seems like, too. So there still is time because, again, I guess the flip side is there aren't a ton of like explosive passing offenses on Michigan's schedule this season. But
it's very backloaded too.
Yeah, like, that too.
Even
yes.
Even among the teams Michigan's expected to handle comfortably, Purdue and Maryland historically have pretty good passing attacks, but they're also in November. It does feel like you're gonna, you know, there'll be challenges. I'm not saying it's a cakewalk, but
no, not at all.
It does feel like they have another month, arguably, yes, to like kind of sort this out.
I agree. And so I guess is that a bad news thing that they I don't know if it means much that they haven't totally answered that yet. I think the I guess the other thing I'd say though is, and this is in the positive, is Mike Sainer still is really damn good, man. Like, so to me, they have two really good cornerbacks already. Like,
yeah,
he's I think you, they've right yeah. they've shown that they can play him anywhere. He is not like a gadget type player, you know. Like they could throw him out there against anybody, and he's going to play at a high level. But there, you know, but you, it is that one spot where I think the old adage is that that's definitely one position you can never have too many good players at. So I think if you're Michigan, if you want to eventually accomplish the goals you've set forward for yourself heading into what's a really big year, I think you want to see more further down your depth chart than what maybe they've seen so far.
Yeah, I think that's all good. Here, I came up with three things. You covered all of them, I believe, but I think the first thing I want to see is I want to see Josh Wallace and Keyshawn Harris against Big Ten passing attacks and Big Ten wide receivers. Wallace especially, I feel like I've been pretty impressed. I think he's only given up like 8 passing yards in 3 games or something like that. I'll pull up that stat in a moment. But he has played a lot of Group of 5 competition. That was never the concern. The concern is that he hasn't really faced a ton of Big Ten competition or Power 5 competition. So I think that will be something I know I'll be watching against Rutgers is how do both players, you know, Keyshawn Harris, fun story. I mean, 5th-year guy, former walk-on, kind of was track first in high school, found his way to the football field and has worked really hard to get himself into a position as a starter. And so neither have really faced like the Big Ten competition yet. So that's number one. Number two, I want to see how Jair Hill and DJ Waller continue to develop in the next month, because I think both of them have the ability, not a prediction, they have the ability to pull a Will Johnson or Rod Moore, where by the time November is coming around, they are knocking on the door of that starting lineup. They are making big plays, and they have earned the coach's trust. You know, Steve Klingscale throws a lot at his players. He asks a lot of his players in that secondary. Some players, though, you know, the ones that are on the All-American list preseason, they answer the call, they answer the bell, they get better throughout the course of their freshman year to the point where they're helping Michigan. I think that could really be a nice supplement or complement to what the rest of Michigan's secondary can do. Because I'm with you. I think Sainer still, Will Johnson, Rod Moore, that might be as good of a headlining trio in the secondary as anyone outside of Athens, Georgia has right now. I'd have to do some more research, but it does feel like all three are very good. They're very high on draft boards. They're very high on all conference lists. And statistically, they proved a lot last season. So yeah, how do those two freshmen develop? And then number three, we kind of talked about it a little bit. I want to see a top 50 draft pick emerge out of that edge position. I feel like Braden McGregor's had a pretty nice season. I feel like Jalen Harrell's had actually a great season. But I think if they can do it a couple more times against Big Ten opponents, that's when you'll start to see, okay, you know, these are guys who can really help you against Ohio State, against Penn State. Because right now, Michigan has a pretty good pressure rate. I think they've faced like 81 passing snaps and they have 47 pressures. So can't totally argue with that. I mean, it's pretty comparable to what they've had the past couple seasons. But no one on the team individually has more than 6 so far. Harrell and actually Kenneth Grant both have 6. So can someone emerge as kind of the Mike Morris, or, I mean, obviously the ceiling of this is like an Aiden Hutchinson, but, you know, is there someone who can, now that they have a few starts or a few extra snaps under the belt, is there someone else who can really emerge? So those are the three things separating me from boldly declaring this is the best defense in the country. Obviously, the big caveat is they also have to look this good against teams with a pulse. I mean, no one is winning awards for shutting down UNLV, Bowling Green, and East Carolina. You know, it's about what you do in Big Ten play. All right, Steve, anything else? This is kind of our medium picture podcast, looking at where things stand for Michigan through 3 non-conference games. Kind of an interesting 3 games, even though they all had very similar scores. You know, different head coaches, different players stepping up in different games. And I mean, I don't know. I think it was interesting, the press conferences at, you know, in the wake of this Bowling Green game, because it almost seemed like Michigan was like, they are emotionally and mentally done with these like tune-up games. They need to play someone with a pulse, I think, was an impression I got. Anything else jump out to you that hasn't been said about Michigan's non-conference play?
I would just kind of echo that. I mean, it's been kind of boring.
Yeah.
For us too, honestly. Like, yeah. It's just hard. You know, it's like, and I even, you know, you kind of feel for the fan. I mean, you have the fans that live like play by play, you know, like the whole outcome of the season is dictated. Each bad play is the end of the world, or each great play is like, and it's just, there's really not much else you can do at that point in the season. Cause there's just, you know, like I said, that's why it's like, it's so hard to glean a ton off of these early games like this. Like I said, you see teams across the country, just everyone, a lot of teams just kind of plodding along. I mean, I think there was talk, you know, I know Georgia played South Carolina last on Saturday, but you know, until then they had really been struggling to run the football. And I believe they were down at halftime, I want to say, at home to South Carolina. Argue the top three teams in the country like played a pretty pedestrian game last week, you know? And so
I feel like, yeah, that kind of weekend,
right? Just going to be one of those weird, we talked a little bit about it in the season preview thing, like how this just kind of feels like there's the possibility for kind of a weird year in college football. What, any more thoughts on that? Yeah. It's just like, it's, I'm ready for conference season. I can only imagine how ready the players are, you know, for conference season. Two-time defending champs, and they're obviously chomping at the bit to three-peat. I think there's got to be a readiness to see some better and more legitimate competition, right? So that'll be interesting to see how Michigan comes out on Saturday. Other thing, real quick, not even Michigan related, what a freaking slate of games on Saturday. I mean, have you seen? There's like five or six.
Yeah, we're
going to
find out who's
yeah.
3-0 is more impressive.
So do you have, because I think our listeners would probably be, who do you have, Notre Dame or Ohio State on Saturday?
You know, I was ready to pick Notre Dame, who has looked really good.
They've been one of the teams that has looked actually pretty solid their first three weeks.
Yeah,
for sure.
Hartman looks like a great addition, and I think their defense and O-line, kind of like Michigan, they're never.
Sure. It's in South Bend, isn't it?
It is.
Oh boy.
I think Ohio State might have figured some things out.
Okay, you're still. I don't. It's always hard to pick against Ohio State, regardless. You know, even though, yeah, you argue Notre Dame's look like the better team through 3 weeks, and they've played like NC State's far better than any team that Ohio State has played so far. So that's gonna be a fascinating game. I to post on the board that I think Michigan fans actually should be rooting for Ohio State, honestly. They recruit directly much more against Notre Dame, and it doesn't hurt to have an Ohio State team with a better resume.
I was going to say, if you think Michigan will beat Ohio State in Ann Arbor, you want Ohio State to be undefeated.
Right, right. Well, you know, there's that whole you can't ever cheer for Ohio State because you're a Michigan fan type thing. But
I
think most logic should have you actually wanting them to win on Saturday. Yeah, because of that. I mean, a Marcus Freeman led Notre Dame in the playoff hunt would be about as worst case scenario for Michigan and recruiting wise. Like, they really are Michigan's primary recruiting rival. I feel like, I don't know if there's another program they recruit directly one-on-one more with than Notre Dame. It has been a little bit more with Ohio State the last couple cycles, but yeah, I don't know who's going to win that game. I think Ohio State is favored though. Aren't they? Like, aren't they open as like 3.5 point favorites? I was a little bit surprised to see that, but anyway,
and no, they're ranked a little higher. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's no, so Saturday is when it kind of really feels like college football season just begins, period. I mean, again, Rutgers not like a primetime big name game for Michigan, but it is obviously their biggest test. And then it's just a slate full of huge, huge games on Saturday. So probably the most exciting day of the season so far for Michigan fans and college football fans, period. So, you know, it'll be nice to get into like some actual, you know, it's again, we knew Michigan would win all three of these games. It ended up kind of being how it seems like Michigan is, where it's like, it's easy, but
yeah,
they can never make it too easy.
Like,
they
of Harbaugh's games look exactly like that, where it's like 30 something to like under 10. And it's just like kind of a slow moving game.
And it was never in doubt. Yeah. But there are things that you can look at and say, well, what about that? You know, like it is. It's, I feel like that there have been a lot of games like that, particularly early in the season every year. So, you know, Saturday, Rutgers gave Michigan one of their better games last year, did they not? I believe that was the one game I missed. Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit more in the Michigan Rutgers preview episode. But yeah, they know how to stop the run, or Michigan's run game. You know, Greg Schiano feels like he has a pretty good defensive mind, I would say. You know, their defense has been good. And 2021, it was a one possession game in Ann Arbor. And then 2022, Michigan was trailing at halftime. And they ended up pulling away with, like, I think there was like a pick six. I think there was, you know, Michigan ended up pulling away and the score looked more lopsided. But yeah, Rutgers, I'll put it like this, and we'll discuss it a little bit more in a couple days. But the difference between the first three games and this game is if Michigan does something impressive in this game, it counts. You know, I think you and I have both struggled with this with our stories where we're like, wow, JJ McCarthy set this record. But it was against UNLV.
Yes.
But it was against ECU. We're like, oh, wow, this defense looks amazing. You know, five sacks in the first half, but it was UNLV. Yeah, we used to do the but Rutgers. That used to be a thing that we actually did in this podcast. I think they're to the point, though, like if Michigan, whether it's the passing attack, run game, defense, whatever, if it looks impressive against Rutgers, that's going to carry a lot more weight. So I think you and I are on the same page. I mean, just covering the team, it's a little bit easier when Michigan's facing conference opponents or Power Five opponents, because you can just cover things as is. You don't have to like be doing all these caveats or bending over backwards to like see, okay, if they did it against this team, what does that mean against whatever team? You know, this is a little bit more, the game will be at face value. You know, the keys to victory will not be keys to a successful weekend. It will actually be keys to victory. So yeah, it's here. Non-conference play, done and dusted. Michigan 3-0 is expected, plus 80 scoring differential. Didn't score as many points as maybe a lot of people expected, but they also were in control of all three games. Backups got in for the fourth quarter of all three games. Michigan was very much in control. Could have won those games by more if they wanted to. So now we'll see what they've got against Big Ten opponents. It's time to play some Big Ten football. For C. Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Lots of stories over at themichiganinsider.com. And we will see you for the Rutgers preview episode.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.